This is a podcast from Minute Media.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. Speedball might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Hello, 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 and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast, the first one of 2022, guys. And it started off with a corker. Joining me on today's show, we've got Blake.
Hey there.
We've got Gully.
Evening, guys.
And we've got Kim.
Hi, guys.
Firstly, how are we all feeling? New year, new me. Are we all feeling good? You know, up and positive for the new year. I'm guessing we'll start with Kim. How are you feeling today, out of curiosity?
Oh, God, I'm feeling the most energetic I've ever felt in my life today.
Good to know. Good to know.
I'll leave on there.
Yeah. Well, guys, let's just get cracking straight into the game. For anyone who's been living under a rock for the last 24 hours and has decided to come to Wolves Fancast before looking anywhere else, Wolves won for the first time since 1980 at Old Trafford, beating Man U 1-0. I mean, it was the stuff of, I was going to say, the stuff of legends, it felt like, guys. If we go back to the lineup, we've of course missed the last couple of games because of COVID postponements, but the team was pretty much as to be expected, would you say, Gully?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I think, first thing to say from my perspective was I was just buzzing for us to have a game on it. It's been pretty shit having our games called off over Christmas for many reasons. But, you know, it's just that period just isn't the same without football. I'm not ready to listen to anybody who feels differently. So Christmas is football. Football is Christmas. That's just
I think
it.
I could have. Yeah, I completely agree with you. I reckon I could have coped with losing one game, but losing two was tough.
Yeah,
I needed honestly. Something. I did miss that, and even I guess on the Monday morning, you know, or pretty much all day to be honest, like just being on Twitter and being on, you know, catching up with people about the game.
The Arsenal game.
You feel it, yeah.
The Arsenal game was my dad's birthday, and it was the day out, and that was it. Yeah. Like that's your birthday present, mate. Deal with it. Mm. Happy days. So then we had to make alternative plans, didn't we? So that fucked everything up. But just the buzz of the team being announced, you know, you feel like you've been out of it for like months almost, but it's only been a couple of weeks, hasn't it? And the fact that it was Man United, first game of the year, it was. I've never been so excited to watch a game sat at home, I don't think.
Yeah.
My whole Christmas was centered around these two games. Like, I was like, okay, Boxing Day, it's a bit annoying, tradition, but at least we've got United and Arsenal. And then when we didn't have Arsenal, I was absolutely gutted. So I think, yeah, that's where my overexcitement came from yesterday. I think.
Don't know what you're talking about, Kim.
Is that what you're putting it down to, Kim?
Yeah.
Just overexcitement, yeah. Yeah.
And of course, I had COVID for the two games prior. So
you got lucky then almost.
So Blake.
Well, almost. So, but I missed four games really. So that was just crushing me. So yeah, it was brilliant to have this be the one that I came back for.
Yeah, it felt from a Wolves perspective anyway, just the stars aligned for us. It's a like, yeah, all day just felt like there was just that right positivity. And yeah, you know, we'll talk a bit about transfers and recalls and stuff like that, but focusing on the game itself, I mean, Gurley, me and you were chatting beforehand saying just felt like we were going to win, I was like, I didn't think we were going to lose. I thought we were going to put on a show, and we did.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at this United team, you see the names, but you see the way they've played, the kind of mess that the club has been in pretty much ever since Sir Alex left. This isn't the same club that we grew up watching back in the 90s. And when you think about how we've played against them since we got promoted back to the Premier League.
Yeah.
You always fancy us. I can't call out a game where I think United have genuinely been the better side. It was notorious for being very low scoring and tight and pretty turgid. Like last season at Old Trafford was a pretty dreadful game for the neutral. But I'm glad we took the approach that we did, started the front three with Trincao and Pedence, and really took the game to them, because that's what it required.
Yeah, and I mean, first half in particular, it felt like how we played against them in the initial fixture early in the season, like how we went out, you know, organs blazing, Blake.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was fantastic to see, you know. I think that was really a game where we needed to be there, because while Manchester United have a bunch of great players, they're not really a team, are they? So I think the game, like you guys said, was really there for the taking, and we took full advantage of that.
Yeah, I was going to say, starting, I guess, first half-wise, we got plenty of shots off. I guess I want to sort of pick on a couple of players in the first half for sort of overall general thoughts, and I guess we'll go one good, one bad. But we mentioned sort of starting with front three. And Daniel Podence seemed to, you know, turn it on once again. Similar to how he did against Chelsea before the break, and really put in a good performance. But then Trincao on the other side, and even Jimenez looked quite anonymous. I mean, what did you guys sort of think of the overall display of the front three, particularly in the first half? Because that's when we had our real kind of sense of urgency.
I think we were really, really on it in terms of, as a team, from the word go, from an attacking perspective, which I think I was a bit surprised at how we weren't doing our usual defending deep that's often happened in various away games this season. I think I was looking at the stats that, actually, I can't take credit. My friend did tell me about this stat, that the 15 efforts that we had shots on target in the first half is the most since records began at Old Trafford.
Wow.
So you were obviously doing something right. However, if you actually watch the game, atrocious, aren't they? And I think you're right, Rich, to be honest. Jimenez, and Trincao were a bit, they weren't really in the game, whereas Pedence, I thought he, especially first half, he was really, really getting in between the lines, getting his shots off. I thought he looked kind of back to his best again, and was probably unlucky not to, you know, get something, get a return, get an assist or a goal, I think.
Yeah.
I'm a bit worried with Jimenez, in fact, and it just sort of seems like he's been missing in action for the past few games. And it's something that really worries me, that we're just never really going to get him back the way he used to be. And granted, he can still be a great footballer. We saw that at Southampton and a few other games this season. But I really am just worried that Jimenez may not be the answer that we need up front.
That's going to be a tricky one, I guess, kind of going forward. And it's probably one of the reasons why Bruno Lage is sort of very much saying, I want us to get another striker. I want us to have another option, because he's played most games this season. He's played most minutes this season. And for someone who is finding his feet back, I completely get where you're coming from. My heart very much overrules my head when it comes to Jimenez. In terms of, you know, wanting to see him play, but I guess there is a reality at some point, especially with Fabio Silva's cameo, which we'll kind of touch on to in a bit. But I mean, we talked about forwards, and it was a bit, you know, good and bad. Gully, I'm going to pass it over to you to wax lyrical about wingbacks and the centre midfield, because I feel like you'll have a lot to say on them. Because again, We've watched Neves and Moutinho enough times over the last 3 years to feel that they don't work, but it's a different story now. And Monday's game was something else in the middle of the park for them too.
Yeah, it's kind of like with every passing week, we look back at the Nuno tenure with a little bit more like, were we really getting the best out of these players to a certain extent, especially with the whole idea that Neves and Moutinho, you know, and it was quite widespread that there was a view that Neves and Moutinho couldn't operate together. I remember I think we did a live on Transfer Deadline Day, and someone posed the question of who we'd swap West Ham's midfield for. Would we take any of their players and stuff? And, you know, hindsight is a wonderful thing, but, and I know West Ham are playing well this season, but if you said to David Moyes, you held a gun to his head and said, you're losing your job tomorrow unless you swap Neves and Moutinho for Rice and Soucek, I think he would take that trade, firstly. I honestly believe that. You know, so, and I mean, we were down in Brighton and we were in a pub with some Brighton fans, you know, another team that are going pretty well. And they looked at us and they said, you know, with your squad, you've got a really, really good team. You know, that they think individually that, you know, a lot of teams can't hold a candle to us. Like, and the way they're being utilised is another question. And the way that we're getting the best out of all of our talent is another question, especially like we just mentioned with like Trincao, Jimenez, not necessarily playing to their levels at the moment. Individually, like, the talent, as we saw, as I'd say we've shown every time we play Man United, you know, Neves, Paul Pogba wasn't playing this week, but Neves shits on Paul Pogba every time he comes up against him. He's just an absolute Rolls Royce. Moutinho yesterday was, mate, the guy was just on another level to anybody on the pitch. Totally. Even Marcel looked like a really good wing back yesterday, putting some really lovely crosses in. And I've not been his biggest fan this season. So just to see that, you know, it's always a good reminder, especially during a transfer window, that, you know what, we're actually all right. We're actually a pretty good team. We've actually got some good players, and the fans need to kind of be reminded of that every now and then.
Yeah.
I think, do you know what the funny thing is? That Moutinho didn't look his age. He was running around like, it was such a good performance. And then you just saw Ronaldo, who at one point felt like he couldn't even outpace Connor Cody. And I just thought, wow, like,
because he's shit.
Well, we won't go into that one.
I was gonna say,
we will. Gully. We will today.
I won't necessarily flip to talk about Man United too much, but I'm pretty sure yesterday, Gully, you described Ronaldo as being the eighth best Portuguese player on the pitch yesterday.
That wasn't me, but I wholeheartedly agreed.
Was it
with
not
it.
You?
Wholeheartedly agreed with it. He was a shadow of any of the Portuguese internationals that were on show. Let's just put it that way. And one of them doesn't even have a cap for his national team, Jose Sá. So
I mean, let's say all the performers, you know, all the Wolves players kind of held accountable, especially the back line throughout. I mean, it feels like we're week in, week out, we're saying Cody's had a strong game yet again. Moutinho's had a strong game yet again. Kilman, you know, just he locks down Cristiano Ronaldo. That is not something that many centre halves get to say. Even this season, despite his 47 goals in 2021, he's still got goals this season for Man United, and is that just the way Wolves kind of handled it? You know, we talked Marcel. I thought Semedo was fantastic yet again. And, you know, there's some absolute BS transfer rumours about Matt Doherty coming back to Wolves. I feel like I shouldn't have said that absolute because I know what's going to happen now. But, you know, it almost drags back that conversation about comparing Semedo and Doherty and a year and a half in, and it's night and day, which one I think you'd have at the club and which one brings, you know, I wouldn't want to put Matt Doherty in after the 18 months he's had back in this team when you look at the work, all the work Semedo's doing.
But as much Semedo, as I love Doc.
Semedo isn't 30 odd million worth better than Doherty without going over old ground again. Honestly, like, and I get it, Semedo's better than Doherty, but I'd still rather us have spent that money in other more important areas in the team. That's just me. No goals, no assists, isn't it, Rob? Is it not, again?
I love how we'll say hang there. I know Gully's got words, and I'm trying to think of the right way to say it.
I'm not gonna throw Kim under the bus because you know, we all know what kind of state she ended up in yesterday. So.
I don't think my state has anything to do with Semedo versus Doherty, though.
We're just giving you a pass today, that's all.
Well, I think it's really worth noting that we've conceded one goal from regular play and one penalty, and that was it for the entirety of last month. And I just think defensively this team is probably maybe the best in the league. I mean, and we'll see if this continues moving forward, but it just seems like at the back we are absolutely stacked and no one is getting by us. So I can't fault any of that back five. And, you know, as much as I like Doherty, I just don't see a place for him right now. I mean, we've sort of got Aitnori, and I kind of like Aitnori, but I feel like when he transitions into the attack, it's just not quite there. Whereas with Martial, it feels like he's much more comfortable, whether it be at the back or at the front. But I just feel like every single person in that back five has really proved themselves beyond reasonable doubt that they're just superb.
I think, Blake, the point you made there about defensively has probably been that if you look at the other teams that have great defensive records in this league, they probably all dominate the ball within every single game that they play. So if they didn't necessarily enjoy that much possession, they probably would have defensive records that might look a little bit similar to ours. But for a team that doesn't necessarily go out and have 60% of the ball every single week, we're more like 50-50 really. Our defensive record, it's ridiculous. And, you know, Tony Roberts tweeted yesterday, I said to him, 0 set-piece goals conceded at the halfway point of the season. That's just... someone needs to go and reach out to Opta and find out if that's a record, because I can't imagine we're far off it if we are.
Yeah. It's incredible. And
that is it is crazy. And what can we can't even improve defensively. I don't think there's anything that we could improve on.
No. And we don't,
like, it's near enough like masterclass, isn't it, every single week defensively.
And it doesn't even feel like, I get, expanding from your point, Gully, about other teams who I guess set up in a more of a possession based side, we don't, from my perception anyway, I'd be interested to sort of know opposition's viewpoints. We don't seem like we're a naturally defensive side. It's not like with Burnley where, you know, if this season, you know, a few years gone by, if they've kind of got a, you know, low goals against record, you go, oh, well, they're sticking, you know, two banks of four, edge of the box kind of stuff. And it doesn't even really feel like that. We're defending a bit deep, but it's not like we're, it just feels just normal. I'd be interested to sort of see how different teams perceive us, and I think there'd probably be different viewpoints depending on, you know, whether you're a Chelsea fan or a Brighton fan, or
it all depends on how those games go against those teams ultimately, doesn't it? People only see opposition really for two games a season, and whatever impacts they have on you is what you kind of carry with you.
And there's not a lot of media narrative around Wolves in that regard either, I guess.
No,
which I think does sway it.
No, and we're a boring news item to a certain extent now, aren't we? So people will attach that to us in terms of our playing style, and they look at the goals against column, they look at the goals for column. You know, they're low numbers. So watching Wolves games is going to be potentially boring because there's not going to be a lot of goals, and that's what people, you know. But that's the currency of football these days, isn't it?
But it's great to be boring, isn't it? Not conceding any goals.
You've always been with a chance of winning.
When you're seventh in the league, you can't as a Wolves fan, you can't complain.
Is it like 2 points a goal or something like that? We've got like
the new stat that came out with yesterday, wasn't it? I hadn't seen that one before.
I do love it when like just a completely like random one like that, because from like I guess a pure statistics point of view, that is the most efficient you can be, isn't it?
And we're the most efficient team in Premier League history, according to that. So
let's keep it up second half of the season. Jobs are good. But going into second half, just because I want to talk about the goal, to be honest, guys. Bruno did something that I think we've all been a bit critical of. And he made a change relatively early. And he brought Traore on a lot earlier than he usually does. And that felt like he did it at a point where the game was starting to lose control. We struggled after the break. And it just, Traore just gave him this panic. But I think if we'd have left it another 10, 15 minutes, I don't know quite how the game would have gone. How did you see the sub, Blake?
I don't necessarily know if I'd say the game was going, but it was certainly much more balanced. We certainly let Man United back into the game a bit more. Granted, it still didn't look like they were getting anything short of easy. Granted, they hit the bar once and they probably should have scored from that. But all of that being said, yeah, it was great that Bruno did bring on Traore when he did, because I think that it was the right time. I think we've kind of all been saying this, and granted, you know, we're not the managers for a reason. But yeah, I think Bruno really played it perfectly.
Yeah, and Gully, when Traore got the ball on the halfway line and started streaking forward, at what point did you kind of think, yeah, Matic is going to get a yellow card here for chopping him down?
It happened later than I thought it would, to be honest, because he almost got into the penalty area. And yeah, he saw Traore's frustration at that point, because people have got to get out of jail free card against him now. If you're not on a yellow already, it's just an easy out where you can just hack him down. And people who want to throw, you know, shade at him seem to forget that he's basically the most targeted player in the Premier League when it comes to fouling him. And, you know, look, he's had an impact on us winning the game, bottom line. And the week, that's what we can ask for. With regards to the timing of the subs, I always think, I imagine there's a plan to bring him on at some point, pretty much in every, if he's on the bench, you're going to use him at some point. So I just don't understand why you would only give him, say, 10 minutes at the end of a game. Like, if you're going to bring him on, let him have some time to have an impact. It's not like it's an if, but, or maybe that you might play him. Because, let's be fair, the likelihood of Pedence, Raul, or Trincao lasting the 90 minutes between the three of them, it ain't going to happen. So you'd rather do it earlier and let him build himself into the game, let him, you know, get his levels going and get his blood flowing, and then he can actually do something with it. And that's what he showed.
He needs at least half an hour, doesn't he? I just think it's really unfair. Like you said, Gully, like, you can't just bring
every
him
player
on
does, really.
10 yeah. for the last, well, yeah, but for the last 10 minutes, and then it's like, get the ball to Traore, and like everyone freaks out when he doesn't take on the man, or, you know, makes the wrong decision, and then it's like, then by that time the game's over. Whereas at least half an hour gives him chance to do something stupid and then redeem himself.
You only got to look at the way Marcus Rashford performed when he came off the bench yesterday to see how hard it is to be a substitute.
He's been horrendous, though, hasn't he?
It was one of the worst substitute performances I've ever seen. Like, to come on and actually be a detriment to your team like that is, like, wow.
Yannick Sagbo-esque.
It was memorable. Sagbo was bad, but he wasn't memorably bad from what I couldn't even tell you. That Rashford performance will stay with me for a little bit, I think, because I'm like,
I was going to say, and contrasting yet again to Fabio Silva, who put in what was potentially the greatest 15, well, he came in on the 81st minute, greatest 10, 15 minutes of his Wolves career. I don't know what he got for Christmas, but I want some of it, because he played like the player we all think he could be. It leads us nicely onto the goal, which I think it was a fantastic team goal, and I love how the way it kind of all manoeuvred was like a fantastic like football system, and like clearly like pieced together in terms of how you want to play, with the interchange for the forward back into back to Neves, to Traore, ball into the box. You know, hopefully you score from that position. If not, then you get someone on the second ball. But pretty much within that team goal, essentially, all the individual parts were fantastic. You look at Silva's hold at play, the Neves pass, you know, that Troyer's cross, right, it got headed away, but it was a challenging cross for me. Like, it wasn't an easiest one to defend. And then Martino's finish, you know, say it was a fantastic collective goal as well as full of fantastic individual components.
What was quite funny about it is at the time, I thought it was a bit of a scruffy goal. like the finish, I thought like maybe the goalie should have had it and all that. But then obviously looking back on it today, and as you say, Rich, like the ball from Neves is just like, he makes that kind of pass look so easy when it wasn't. It wasn't an easy pass to make. And then I can't describe to you how I felt when that ball went in the net. Honestly, it's gone.
Yeah, was in a lot of pain, wasn't you?
A lot of pain. Well, not at the time. This morning, bruises all down my legs. But it was so worth it. Like, I just couldn't believe it went in.
What did you say before recording? You went up 3 sets of seats rather than down them.
Yeah, I think, well, I've been told I went back, like, back. And so you'd think you'd fall, wouldn't you? Like, forward, but no, apparently, like, I end up on the row behind.
Anti-gravity celebrations.
They say, Blake Gully, what were your thoughts on the goal?
The thing I always question isn't drilled into every single footballer's mind is low and hard. This seems to me the most simple concept ever for shots outside the box. No one seems to do it. And I just don't get it. It's like you look... Granted, his shot was kind of scruffy, but it was a low, hard shot, placed well. Even if a Manchester United player gets a foot to it, it's like, well, that creates some pinball at the very least. It might go to Jimenez Jimenez was on, so whoever, Fabio. You just don't know what's going to happen with it. And I just see, you know, no offense to Neves, but how many times do we see him take a shot from outside the box and it ends up in row Z and it's just a goal kick? Nothing comes from it. Whereas with a low, hard shot, it's going to go in. It's going to create pinball. Something's going to happen. You don't necessarily know what. And I just think that was the perfect sort of example of what a low, hard, well-hit shot can do for you.
That's such a good point, though. Our shooting from outside the box is generally horrendous. It's either horrendous or they're just flying, not very often. And it's just like, what are we, I mean, without going on a rant, why on earth are we not practicing shots from outside the box? Because honestly, I feel like the whole team's pretty terrible most of the time.
I'd assume they are practicing it. I wouldn't say they're not. They're just, you know, it's like heat of the battle, isn't it? It's like, you know, you practice penalties, you know, till the day you die, and then you'll miss one in the middle of a proper, like, pressurized moment. It's
yeah, but they're not just like, works, no, but they're not just like, just past the post, they're like literally nowhere near some of those shots. When I was watching,
you saw Neves like, pull that save out of De Gea.
Yeah. And that would have been a worldy goal. That would have been a worldy goal. But what I'm saying is that, like, how many on target shots do we get from outside the box in a game?
Almost none.
That's my point.
But didn't that tell you that it's actually quite difficult? If you look at Martino's goals for us, they're all very precise. If you look at it, like, I remember the one he scored at Old Trafford before. That's still my favourite out of the lot, I think, because it was on his weaker foot. The free kick at Bournemouth, where he was out on the touchline and he whipped it into the top corner. That was unreal. It's just something about him. He's got this precision to his game that he doesn't shoot off.
When he does, he makes it.
He makes it count when he needs to.
When he shoots often, he's still like nowhere near though. And that's not a criticism. Because I know it was a worldy goal and we're getting off the point. But I do think we need to improve our shooting because we score a lot more goals.
I'll be more worried about our forwards not getting on the score sheet. That's my biggest problem, I think, at the moment. Because our forwards are there to be doing that. Martino isn't necessarily that kind of player, but he made it count. Yesterday,
I was going to say, what I would say is I do agree with you, Gully, and wanting strikers to score. But the thing I enjoyed about the goal was actually Martino getting in that position as well. Because, like, if he doesn't have the confidence or the, you know, the role in the team more than anything else. Like same Giammartino doesn't have confidence, like the most accomplished players in like European football in the last.
This also just comes down to the fact though that, and this is my favorite part about this whole, you know, podcast. Man United are terrible. Yeah,
they are.
They give you the confidence to go out and say, you know what, I'm probably going to make a run forward here because I ain't that worried about what's going on behind me. Bottom line, you know, they might have the greatest player in the history of football. Piss off.
Messi doesn't play for him. He plays for PSG. No, he doesn't.
You're right. Sorry, my mistake.
The best player who can't even run.
But they're just a muddled mess, and it's incredibly enjoyable to watch this kind of, you know, I don't know how to describe it. It's just a mishmash of superstars trying to work their way out against a team who have a proper plan. And we saw Bruno in his post-match interview literally just lay down in front of everyone. This is how we did it. Thank you very much and good night. And that's it. And you're like, come on, mate. He literally told the world how we just, you know, there's your blueprint, guys. Just follow it.
But you're completely right that, right, Martino gets the ball. He takes a touch, doesn't he? So if he shoots and he gets blocked by the defenders, it's going to roll out to a midfield two of Matic and McTominay, who aren't going to get that ball for, you know, you're completely right. He's not going to worry about what's behind him. Why does he need to? And it's not even a team of superstars anymore, isn't it? Yeah, they've got Ronaldo, but they just look weathered.
There's a reason why we played the way we did against Liverpool, Man City and Chelsea. And there's a reason why we played the way we did against Man United. And that's all you need to understand about the whole situation.
The game didn't happen, but just scale-wise, like my continuum of, I guess, attack-minded Wolves to defensive-minded Wolves. So we've got like Man City right at the far end, and then Liverpool, then Chelsea, and Man U's over here. I'm doing this, sorry. For people who are listening on the podcast, I'm trying to do my hands within this screen on the show, like completely losing them. Where would you put Arsenal? How theoretically?
Arsenal, another team that I think we play well against every single time we play. Yeah. I think we
do you think, but do you think we play on the counter against them, or do you think we try and take the game to them?
I think we try and keep the ball. That's what I think. I think we would.
But Arsenal look a little bit more energetic than United, don't they? At least they look like, you know, they've got a bit more flair, actually.
They do. But I still think they're easy to play through if you do attack them.
Mm.
And I feel like, again, going back to the point, we've got enough talent in the team to go and do that. And I'd put Neves and Martino as a midfielder up against anyone, really. Like, just look at them. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. I'd say the last thing, the last part of the actual game itself we want to cover is in the last minute. Jose Sarr's save against what initially I thought it was going to be a Cristiano Ronaldo with like a 30 meter run up, and
he can't take free kicks. He's hopeless.
No, he can't do it.
No, and it was genuinely good. He'd given it to Fernandes. But the set, you know, again, it's sort of just I wasn't stressed. I don't know about you, Gooley. I mean, to be honest,
I got a bit because it was Bruno, and I've seen him, you know, stick on top corner. But I felt sorry for Fabio, by the way, at that point, because he thought, you know, he's done so well, and then he's going to be the scapegoat if he'll score off this.
I don't think that was a foul, though. Have you seen the photos after? He literally, like, who was it? Was it Matic? Who, like,
I think it was Phil Jones.
Phil Jones, who literally put his head down. So I don't think it was a high foot, personally.
If he could have gone, I think it's Mike Dean. He likes the drama, doesn't he?
Yeah, it did very much end it on sort of this dramatic note. But I trusted Sarr. I didn't get those same nerves that I've had previously. I mean,
I was nervy.
Were you?
Yeah, nervous? I was going to say nervy.
It's especially after Liverpool, I just thought, oh, here we go again. Oh, we're just going to concede another 90 pluser, and it's just going to go all to waste. But sure enough, as you said, Jose Sarr, he's the man.
In terms of my other match, guys, I mean, I've pulled up the graphic from who scored. I mean, two reasons. A, because it just puts a bit of a value to the players in terms of their performances. Pardon me, but it also but it also has Man United's formation as well, which is a 4-2-2-2. Bonkers. Bonkers. But anyway, Goody, who would you give Man of the Match to? They gave it to Moutinho. Who else was sort of a standout for yourself?
Neves, 6.8. Who the fuck is watching these games? Like, Jesus Christ. It would have been between... I'll pick out three, to be fair, because I don't think the defence was overly worked. I think Semedo was class. I think Moutinho was unbelievable. I thought Podence was just unreal. And I think he's on the way to becoming our best attacker at the moment. So maybe for that, on that basis, like Andy Hinchcliffe gave, give it to Podence.
I think there's a few candidates in there, isn't there? I think I'll go with Podence as well, just because I think it's really brilliant to see him back and playing well, especially after catching COVID and stuff that he's been through. And, you know, it would be really nice if we could just have him there as a solid sort of winger, because we've sort of, as we've kind of talked before about how we don't really necessarily have anyone who's really cemented on those wings. And it'd be really nice if Podence could step up and really fill that role for us.
Who am I going for? I'd say pretty much the same as you guys, really. I think Podence obviously had a great game, but I just can't look past Moutinho just because he produced that moment of magic. And obviously his all-around performance was just pretty insane. So, yeah, I guess, yeah, Moutinho, Neves had a great game. I think Cody's a bit unlucky to have such a low rating. But, yeah.
Can I just say as well, like, anybody who went to go and jump on the Watching Ronaldo Live bandwagon, I hope you've been rightfully kind of wronged with your whatever opinion you might have had, because he leaves me cold. Like, there's nothing to enjoy about him at all. Oh, yeah, he might score a goal here or there, but there's nothing to enjoy about his football. Like,
so. Did people actually do that?
People were talking about it as if it was like, it might, you know, what if he gets suspended? He's on a yellow card or something like that in his last game. And he might have been suspended if you pick one up and things. And it's like, oh, I'll never get to see Ronaldo live, this kind of shit. And it's just like, I mean, I appreciate you do want to watch, in theory, the best players in the world. You know, being part of the Premier League, is the appeal is there for that. We are watching the best players in the world every week. But him, come on, not him.
It's maybe, I do you reckon that's why Dan went, just to watch Ronaldo?
No, I'll cut Dan a bit of slack, and I'm happy for him to jump on me in the WhatsApp group, but I'll cut Dan some slack. He is a proper Wolves fan, and I'm sure he had nothing to do with it. You just did a silent sue then on YouTube.
I was going to say, Rich,
we've lost you. You've gone totally.
I was going to say, I did it silently.
Yeah,
which is the E.
You've gone on mute now.
My mic decided to completely mute myself twice then, which was definitely impressive. But yeah, Dan was definitely doing the Ronaldo celebrations. Let's be honest. Whether he was doing it ironically or unironically, we'll leave it there for him to decide. But yeah, again, I was going to say, I do kind of get it around Ronaldo, because you say he is one of the greatest footballers of all time. But I mean, me and you, Gully, very much saw it. I don't want to do a Messi versus Ronaldo chat.
It's just the fact that, and again, I don't disagree that he's one of the best players of all time. He's also one of the most underwhelming watches. Yeah. As well, you want to watch 90 minutes of football. Don't go and watch Ronaldo, because you're not going to get 90 minutes out of him. You're just not.
Yeah,
and no, the point was, he was one of the best players in the world, But now he's definitely coming to the end.
He only cares about his own legacy. He's just interested in his own legacy, and that's all he's here for, despite his 47 goals in the calendar year.
We can't remember that. I think I kind of go by the Marie Kondo line. Does he spark joy when I watch him play? And no, he doesn't.
No, at all.
So, you know, like my Messi draw, he can get tidied away for all I care. But I think that's probably a good point before I bring up any other sort of cleaning gurus to go to an ad break. And then we'll be back after this to talk a little bit about African Cup of Nations, a little bit about Total Recalls, and to do a bit of Twitter Corner. So we'll be back right after this. Hi, it's Richard from Wolves Fancast here. Just interrupting today's show before we get back to some questionable opinions and opinionated questions to talk to you a little bit about our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. They are a design agency that put you and your business first, from web design, logo and branding design, and marketing. If you have any marketing needs, get in touch with them to find out how they can help you get it right. They are over at pixelyetimedia.com. Now let's get back to a show where we can give you some really forced wordplay, niche cultural references, and maybe even a bit of football talk. Hello and welcome back, everybody. As I mentioned before break, the two kind of points I guess align with one another to a degree, but I wanted to start with Roman Sace, who's now departed off to play in the African Cup of Nations for Morocco. He was someone, I guess, at the start of the season and end of last season who I kind of could see potentially moving on. But over the course of the first half of the season, he's become such an integral player into his side. Gully, how big a miss do you think he'll be for Wolves over the next sort of month or so?
Well, we've just lost our best free kick taker, haven't we, for the next month?
Well, yeah, we talked about Troy doing that run. I didn't even talk about our left centre half smashing the crossbar, did we?
Yeah, everyone was probably dreading him just lining that up, but that was a lovely little deft effort, wasn't it? When you think about the fact that we haven't changed our back three since the opening day of the season, you know, that's probably unheard of in itself as well. He's so important to the way that we play, especially in possession. You know, when it comes to playing out from the back, we do it a hell of a lot more now than we used to under Nuno. And it basically comes through him. You know, people always used to talk about Connor Cody spreading those passes out to the wing backs and stuff. But Sace is the one that really breaks the lines with his passes, finds the forwards, has that extra bit of precision, I think. And I think that's what we're going to miss most. But he's also proven to be a perfectly competent Premier League defender who has a slightly rash side, which I kind of like. You know, we're going to miss a bit of shithousery, although Marcel does a fairly good job of providing it as well. And maybe he's going to be the left-sided centre-half going forward. But yeah, I think he's leaving us in a very good position, though. And I think that's what Bruno was most worried about, that we didn't have plenty of points on the board at the point that AFCON came round. And he's done a great job until this point.
Yeah, I think what's the most interesting thing about this is he's probably our most underrated defender, would you say, this season? It feels like, actually, yeah. Cody and Kilman have been getting all the plaudits, and Sace has just been ticking along nicely, not doing anything spectacular, maybe not putting as many sort of man of the match performances as the other two. But I think he's, you know, he's quite underrated. He's a left-footed centre-back. He's just... I think we'll miss him, and I think he does the simple things well, and I think he'll probably be missed. I think the issue is we haven't really got a replacement. Who's actually going to play there? Is it going to be Marcel? Is it going to be Dendonka? Bolly, maybe? No, he's not going
well,
to
I was
going to
say, but Bolly's... not being, I was gonna say, whether he's not being called up / he's pulled out via injury.
It would be quite funny if he was claimed injured and then we started him on Sunday or something.
That would be
he's not fit enough to fly over to Cameroon, but
he's fine, fit enough to play against Sheffield United. I mean, that sort of brings us nicely on to what you said, Kim, in terms of who's gonna play there, because Wolves over the, I guess, over the weekend have recalled Ryan Giles and Deion Sanderson from their loan spells at Cardiff and Birmingham respectively. Part of me is a little bit frustrated, to be honest, just because they both had really solid loan spells, particularly Giles, joint amount of assists so far in the Championship for a not particularly good Cardiff side. So you can't hope that they get minutes, and whether they potentially go back out on loan at the end, towards the end of the month, if we get more players in. I just want to make sure, for me, it's like on a player perspective, but both of those players are back at the club, back in contention. Do you see either of those two making a big impact in the, I guess, the squad / starting 11, Blake?
Personally, not. Now, that's not to say that they won't have their fair share of appearances, but personally, I haven't seen anything from them that makes me think, oh yeah, these guys are definitely ready for the Premier League and they're just going to come in and smash things up. And I just haven't seen anything like that. Now, granted, we have some issues, don't get me wrong. And I think there could be some real utility to having these guys back. And I think that they could really serve their purpose. But do I really think that they're going to make a lasting impression? Not particularly, to be honest.
I feel pretty sorry for them, actually. I think they would have, for their own careers, they needed to just, I think they're both having decent seasons and they're playing at a decent level, and getting regular games. And it's just a shame, isn't it, that they're now being hauled back. And like Blake said, they're not really going to play many games, are they? Like, maybe, will they play in like the cup games, maybe? Or are they literally just going to be sitting on the bench every week like Morgan Gibbs-White was, and it just really, really hadn't helped his career? Like, I'm just glad that we're not going to recall Gibbs-White, it looks like, because I think that would be a big mistake if we did that.
I think that goes to show that the kind of the levels that we see in the three of them, if you talk about Gibbs-White, Sanderson and Giles. So you can look at it two ways, I guess. Sanderson and Giles have probably proven themselves at Championship level now, you could say, to a certain degree.
Yeah, I think you can say it for both of them.
Yeah, that, that's probably the level they'll play at regardless of what happens over the next 6 months towards the end of the season. So if they're now to try and make the step up, keeping them at Wolves and saying to them, okay, look, you've done your bit in the Championship. Whatever happens, that's your level. Like, you're not going to fall below that. So now is your chance to prove if you're good enough for the Premier League. The difference with Gibbs-White is that I think they know that he's good enough for the Premier League, but they need him to go out and play minutes to actually get him ready for the step up next season, which they probably see him as part of the squad next season. Whereas with Giles and Sanderson, they've dangled the carrot a little bit now and said, look, you're going to have the rest of the season. Show us your worth. And you know what? It could be a masterstroke if they went and stepped up now. Because I think with Sanderson especially, the one thing that we do lack at the back, whether we agree or not, is pace. And it just adds a different dimension to that back line. He's quick. He's very, very quick. I remember there was that game at Villa in the Carabao Cup where we played all the kids. He played right wing back that day, and he reminded me a lot of when Herve came in, where he wasn't that great on the ball, but getting up and down the line, he's absolutely lightning. And if you add that to the back line, the three centre halves, you can play 5 yards further up the pitch, and I think he's ready to kind of have a chance at least.
Yeah, I think with both of them, to be fair, and one of the, I guess, joys of playing with a back 3/5 is you have that extra cover. And if we assume that, let's say, maybe against Southampton, if we exclude the cup for now against Sheffield United, that, whether it's Marcel plays left centre half, let's say Aitnor is not fit, so Giles has to play, you've got good cover there for him. If Sanderson comes in, you know, on the other side, let's say, just make it easier. He's got Connor Cody next to him. He's got Semedo next to him. And there's a lot of security in that for an inexperienced player at that level for me. And I've got, to be honest, with either of them, I've got no real concerns just because this team seems to be so well drilled. It'll just be a question of whether they can, I guess, implement themselves in the system. But
that's the thing, though, isn't it? They're not coming into a team that's under pressure, really. Mm. And if you're throwing them into a pressurized environment, you can understand where there's a risk attached to that. We're in a pretty low risk position. You know, we've got 28 points at this stage of the season. We continue on that rate. We finish on 56. I think the best season under Nuno is 57. So you'd have taken that at the start of the season. Bottom line, yeah. You know, we're playing fine. So if you drop 3 or 4 points between now and the end of the season on that, is it that much of an issue for the sake of someone potentially having a career at Wolves? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be interesting to see. I did do a quick poll on Twitter earlier to see who we thought would get more minutes, and Deion Sanderson won sort of 75% to 25%. Ryan Giles. So I think people are expecting Sanderson to play more than Ryan Giles over the next sort of few months at Wolves. But I think very much time's going to tell with both of those. And I guess my last sort of thought, now the transfer window's open. Do we think that those two players being recalled is an indication of our lack of activity in the transfer market in the next 4 weeks, Blake?
More likely than not. Now, I'm not quite as doomsday, this is the apocalypse, oh no, Fosun aren't investing in Wolves, the horror, as some people certainly are. But it is, you know, it is disappointing that we're not going to have, well, probably not going to have much fun in January. But that being said, I mean, is it the end of the world? I certainly don't think so. I think we have a team that's, granted, it is thin, but it's certainly proved itself to be good enough of playing well, of being a team which could compete for Europe. So no matter how this plays out, I think we're going to be just fine. But I do think that if we're recalling him, especially this early, then we're probably not doing any business this month.
It's not a disaster, but it's really disappointing, isn't it? Considering how well Bruno's got this team playing and they're not even his players.
I think the thing is, Fosun have said from day one that this is a 10-year project. They have said from day very one that this is going to be a long-term thing. And while I certainly understand the frustration that, you know, we want to be competing for Europe every single season, we want to be being the best team that we could possibly be, I also don't think it makes sense to just splash the cash in January and a bunch of players that may or may not fit in the team. And then we come to find that they're just completely useless and we've just wasted a bunch of money for no reason. Personally,
but
I don't see that,
but they're
as
doing
being
that.
Very useful.
But then, no, but I don't think we're saying that, are we? We just need to get players to just give us an adequate squad number that are up to the standard. So 1 to 2 players, I would be pretty happy with that in January, albeit as long as they're the right players. But it just feels like we are selling to buy. That is it. We haven't got a penny to our name.
Are we doing that if we're taking, you know, if the forget the fact that we're part of our club, we're taking very good championship players and supplementing our squad? That's essentially what we've done by bringing back Sanderson and Giles. That feels okay to me. Like, you know,
if we sign other players, yeah.
Who else do we need to bring in then? Because if you look at it numbers wise, with the likes of Johnny and Neto coming back, I don't see where we need
a centre back and a centre midfield, yeah.
But if Jordao is part of the squad now as well, again, it's all a balancing act.
I mean, especially,
I don't see the value in January. It's just not there.
To me, especially if Neto comes back in February, I think that's a massive improvement to this club essentially overnight. Granted, we don't know if he'll be back to his full self immediately, but I think that Neto is, if we could get Neto back, I think that's one of those key players that would really take this club to the next level.
Yeah.
We get Neto back, we should be binning Traore off and getting some money and then reinvesting that money that we get for Traore back in the team.
But ultimately, if we had Neto yesterday, we win that game 2-3-0, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ultimately, you know, that's what it comes down to. We're lacking a little bit of cutting edge. But I think the mad thing is, and I feel like I've observed this on a number of occasions when Wolves aren't playing, but the kind of the fan base anxiety meter just kind of seems to peak whenever we're not playing. And we had 2 weeks without a game prior to the Man United fixture. The petrol on the fire was John Percy's article that said that we're not likely to do any business. And you've got this whole section of the fan base that are all of a sudden falsing out. And it's like I don't know.
That's a bit extreme, though, isn't it?
A bit. I think it's ridiculous, frankly. Like,
it's not like people on social media to be, you know.
Again, maybe it's just the absence of a game, you know, absence of something actual to talk about, but rather fill the vacuum of information with outrage. You know, maybe that's the way these people operate. But you know, I was seeing tweets like, I'd rather be back in the Championship where, you know, the clubs might actually have some ambition and stuff. And like, in my head, I'm thinking, oh yeah, I'd much rather watching George Saveling in my field compared to Gerard Martino. Those were much better days. But the people calling out the club off the back of perhaps not spending money in January, yeah, it's baffling. Like, I mentioned this the other day, but you know, Everton have already made 2 signings in January, and I can't wait till someone points at them and says, "Well, look, they're doing business, so obviously we should be doing business as well." Because famously, they're always brilliant in the transfer market, aren't they? But you know, just to think about, and I don't, I'm not talking, you know, think about the League One days and all that kind of shit. Think about the way our squad is composed, the way we played against Man United. And maybe we needed that performance to remind people again, but there's talent. Bruno is within his rights to say to his forwards, especially at the moment, say, you're not doing enough. Regardless of whether there's people coming in or not, they need to pick up their performances. We have more in the locker. I think we can all see that we've only scored 14 goals this season. That's not good enough for the talent that we've actually got available to us. That doesn't mean we have to go and sign someone to fix that. That could be something, you know, like we work on the training field. It might be a formation change. All sorts of avenues are available to us, but everyone would rather just throw their arms up in outrage and think, say, Fosu, now you haven't got the ambition, you're not taking us where we want to go.
But do you think it's fair, though, that Bruno hasn't even bought in his own players, apart from
Huang? I think it's fair to say to Bruno, look, I appreciate what you're saying. If there's a deal that comes up that we are going to snap someone's hands off for, fair enough. But if that deal ain't there, then it's just not there. We shouldn't go fishing for something when, you know, it's not going to be value for the club, especially when we're in a safe position within the league. We're potentially on the, you know, looking good for the second half of the season with players coming back from injury. And realistically, the summer, it's around the corner. We've got the opportunity to do business in the summer. It's not that far away, and we've got
3 centre midfielders. 3 centre midfielders currently.
4. I'm counting 4.
Who's fourth? Well,
you can't discount Jordão. You can't discount Jordão because he's there. He's part of the club.
Oh no,
he's part of the club. He's there. He's within the first team.
He only needs a Neves injury, and we're in melt. Like, we're in crisis. Do you know what I mean?
It's 8 in the league crisis.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's like
when we're that happens.
When we're in mid-table, I just think we have room. We have wiggle room. We have the ability to sort of just see how things play out. And there have been some very silly people who've suggested that relegation is still on the table. And granted, if the whole side gets injured, then maybe. But realistically, we're not getting anywhere close to the relegation places this year. And to me, it'd be great to do business in January, but it's one of those things where we just don't have to.
But for Bruno to play his favoured formation, of which we believe is to be 4-2-2-2, then we haven't got the players to do it in his eyes. That's why we're still continuing to play 5 at the back, and we'll still continue to be quite boring until we get some better players where we can play 4 at the back.
But we're still a good team.
And we're probably the best defensive team in the Premier League. So do we really want to shift away from what we have now? I'm not convinced.
completely agree with all your points, which is exactly what you want to hear in a balanced argument.
But we're going on on a tandem now.
No. You're all on track. I think Goody's right in saying that, look, the players we brought in, we've recalled, we've not had to spend any money on getting to a, you know, frankly accomplished, energetic, good level championship players. If someone said to you blind that, you know, you're getting to bring in the player with the joint most amount of assists in the championship, who's going to bolster your squad, you know, okay, great, you don't have to pay anything for him, fantastic. My only sticking point, and you say you look at the squad numbers, the players who potentially are coming back, my only sticking point is around midfield. And I appreciate you can say we've technically got four with Jordão. I've never seen him play. And that, again, but I've read, we haven't seen Jordão at this level. Again, Sanderson at this level. He could be. Player. Yeah.
It's just a supplement. He's not there to be a first team player, as in like start every week. That's not what he's there for.
But if Neves was got a cruciate ligament,
we can't work on hypotheticals. You can't just sign a player every time someone gets injured. Like that's not smart either.
I was going to say my other thing, and smart is the word I was going to allude to, is that if you put all of our first 11 in a row and sort of said, right, where are our best players? We've already looped back at the start of the show saying how good Neves and Moutinho are. Who is going to want to come and be third choice? You know, how we'd all love Renato Sanches to join Wolves. Don't get me wrong. But how's that going to work? What's the selling point for him?
Because Joao Moutinho is on his last legs.
But he isn't, because we've just been talking about for the last 6 months. And I completely get it. The other thing I'm going to just decide to be really just devil's advocate is, Gully, you're right, there's rarely any value in the transfer market in January. Time and time again has proven it. But there's going to be more value in this January transfer window than I think there will be in the summer because of the Winter World Cup. And with the shortened spell around that, players are, you know, players don't like moving just prior to a major tournament, because if it goes wrong, they might not get the call up. So are international players going to be interested in moving in summer? And then if we go in a year, this time next year, we'll have just played in a World Cup. So the market's going to be all out of kilter. Fortunately, Portugal might not qualify, so Wolves could be fine.
But you want to sign players that are playing well, bottom line. And teams who have players that are playing well just aren't going to want to sell them, are they?
Well, not just players that are playing well. I mean, take a look at Man United. I mean, how much money have they spent in the past few years? And they just don't have a team. And one of the things that Wolves really do have is a team. I mean, it feels like every single player that's on that pitch, especially currently, wants to be a part of Wolverhampton Wanderers. And if we're going to sign someone, I think it needs to be someone who wants to be a part of that team.
If you're talking about, again, Man United as an example, Jesse Lingard went to West Ham middle of the season last year, proper boosted them, gave him the kick that they needed to keep their form up. Yeah. You bring him into the team right now, all the questions, how much are you paying him? What are we going to spend if we need to bring him in? Who gets dropped out of the team? Now I know in our four positions we aren't playing well enough, so perhaps there's a spot for him there. But, you know, these are all the things that need to be considered, you know, before you actually go out. Last season, again, West Ham probably had about three. They only ever had Antonio as a striker, like, for the last 3 or 4 years. So there was a need for them to actually go and do it. I don't necessarily think there's that need for the expenditure that we might.
But Bruno says there is. He's clearly come out and said he wants X, Y, and Z.
For good value.
These players.
For good value, though. It has to be good value.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is fascinating for me, because I say I think there's a obvious desire for Wolves to improve, and the other thing that I kind of found interesting, sort of wanted to pick up, is something Gully probably said about 10 minutes ago now, where you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat and improve this team. It doesn't necessarily have to be from spending £15 million to bring in a new player. Wolves or Fosun, the last two, this current manager and Nuno, they've had coaches who improve players, and they are, I guess, I'll say, quote unquote, proper coaches. And don't, you know, Bruno wants more players because I think the squad is threadbare and I don't think there is the strength in depth. But actually, they've both shown in their tenures, you know, historically and currently, that they're improving players, whether it's five formation or them individually. And all right, I'm skeptical about Jordão. But actually, I've got trust in the manager that, you know what, if again, hopefully he plays against Sheffield United and he gets 70, 80 minutes. If he doesn't, that's when I'll have question marks, because it's like, well, if he's not getting a game then, when is he getting a game? Because he's not having an impact. He is, you say, he's fourth man on that roster and he's not getting a look, and he's not, you know, there's no difference between him being in the squad or not at that point. So I think it's going to be a really interesting transfer window. If we don't sign anyone, I don't quite know what the reaction will be. As always, it'll just be dependent on if Wolves have won or lost recently, won't it? So that's what usually drives it.
Yeah. And then the panic button gets pressed.
Yeah. And, you know, even Hwang, we're kind of half assuming he's going to sign permanently, but he's out until February now. And, you know, a month and a half out, in a season for a loan player does sometimes make clubs a bit antsy. So I think there's a lot of variables that are going to go into it. But we'll be here. Don't worry, guys. We will be here to analyse it and debate it all day long. Shall we do a few Twitter corner questions to round up today's show, guys?
Go for it.
Right, let's see. What order should we start with? We'll start from our good friend Nag. So, noting last night was a late Christmas present, what was your worst Christmas present this year? Who's going to be brave enough to say it? Who's got a family who listen?
First of all, I caught COVID, which is shit. But yeah, to give you a real answer, do you guys know what those Funko Pop things are?
Yeah.
I got one of those, and I just think they're like these weird plastic figures, but they have like black holes for eyes. And I just think that they're the most creepy thing that I've ever seen. So,
1,000%
did this person know that when they bought it for you?
No, they didn't know that I didn't like them. So,
okay.
Tough luck for them. I didn't really mind that much, but it's just, I can't bear to even open it. It's just such a weird looking thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I got an Alan Brazil autobiography.
Wow. That's a good one.
From father-in-law.
Every chapter would be like, started with, I was on the sesh one day and then this happened. Like, yeah.
He gives me a run for my money, doesn't he? Alan Brazil.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I was going to say, contrasting it, I also got a self-published book called Walks Out of Shifnal as well, in terms of very good presents. Just give that little plug as well.
Self-published, as in like...
Oh, it was like some bloke has wrote it, and like, yeah, it's not like done by like a publisher or whatever. He's done it all himself.
Nice.
Yeah. So that'll be my plug for the week.
Guess what mine was?
Non-alcoholic
50 in. Kinder Surprises. 50?
No,
50. Yeah.
Are you a fan? I take it you're a fan.
So... Yeah, I love Kinder Surprises, but it's like, basically, it's one of my cousins who just decide, they always wrap really stupid, like, hilariously banterish presents. And it's just 50 Kinder Surprises, but I love the chocolate, so it was shit, but it was, I suppose, you know.
What are you going to do with the toy in the middle? Or toys?
I don't know, I haven't... Well, the chocolate's better than the toys, aren't they? I mean, they're a bit crap.
Yeah,
I have to say, I don't think I necessarily got any bad ones. I mean, I'll put this out to the audience, but I generally ask for socks and boxers like every year.
Great,
just because it's a nice time to kind of update that that part of your wardrobe. And my wife took it to the extreme and bought me a 14 pack of boxers.
I was going to say,
wow,
aggressive number.
That is a lot. I mean, it's not like I needed an entirely new like replacement set, but 14. I didn't realize I had 14 packs.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because it's 2 weeks worth.
Yeah, and it's like the French connection, so like, it's not like they're low quality; they're pretty decent quality as well. Yeah. So, yeah. Now you're all going to know what I'm wearing basically every day of the week.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't really want to go too into too much detail about what and where your wife's been buying you, but is it varied in colour? I can't imagine. You know, if it's all one colour,
yeah, generally all relatively dark colours though.
Okay. Oh no. But okay. So there's at least some like, variation.
Different.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, I mean, I could go upstairs and grab the box for you if you want.
But... I think we'll do it post
recording. Sure. It's fine. It's sure. Fine, yeah. Any other questions? Yeah. Please just tweet me, guys.
I was going to say it's at Molyneux right Musings for anyone who's interested. But right, let's get on to another question because I'm thinking of so many different show titles after this. Right. Nag also asks Kim, how's your hangover?
I thought we were going to skip this question.
No.
The people want to know. We have a duty to answer.
Well, how can I answer this? I'm alive. That's the first positive.
You weren't speaking to us from heaven or hell, wherever you end up.
I'm just battered. I'm absolutely bruised from... Oh, I just don't know what happened. All I'm saying is dry January starts today.
Yeah, to be fair, you were fairly open last week when you were saying, I'm going to do dry January. You're like, but you Wolves are playing on the 3rd. You're like, I'll do it from the 4th to the 4th.
But that's what everyone does, don't they? Like, it officially, like, normal life started again today, didn't it? Like, going back to work, et cetera, et cetera. Like, there was never going to be, I never said, and never committed, can I just say, to dry January until after that game. So now I'm committing. I will be Sunday. I'll be in the pub, but I'll be having a water.
Good for you.
Yeah, but I've said it on this show.
I don't know why you're talking. Why don't you don't go to the pub? Just go to the game, honestly.
Feels like torture. Sociable.
Or have something that isn't water. Like you can get away.
Maybe a blackcurrant soda.
Yeah.
Blackcurrant soda.
Yeah. Right, let's see what else we've got up. Jason Horton. I feel this is a bit like ever so slightly tin hat, but I don't think it's fully. Have we brought, it's almost optimistic rather than tin hat, sorry. But have we brought back Charles and Sanderson to help with the homegrown squad quota if we sign players from overseas? Which I feel...
That's positive, actually. That's just given me a little bit of hope, seeing that question. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a glass half full answer, isn't it?
He is someone who's playing like... He's playing chess and we're just playing checkers argument. Oh, very good. It's like, no.
Retweet, we can get. Thing is, yeah. if we retweet that from the channel after just beating Man United, now everybody's going to be on a high thinking, actually, Wolves have just won, so it must be positive. And now if we look at it this way, everybody's going to be on a high thinking, this January transfer window, we're in business.
Yeah.
That is how fickle we all are.
It must be it. Adam MB asks much more fancast levels. Which way do you hang your loo roll?
I don't know what the official terminology is, but towards me, where it's falling down towards me.
Yeah, agree.
I think that's the normal
way. It comes over the top. Like,
yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think any other way is... Down.
Away from the wall.
Any other way is completely psychopathic, and I don't want to meet those people.
Yeah.
I don't understand why even it might be an offence to do it the other way, to be honest, but
I don't know.
I might just flip it around tonight when I go upstairs.
What? Again, you've always
just introduce a bit of chaos. Yeah,
just keep doing it until your wife notices.
Yeah,
that'll be it. Although no, not just your wife, just do it in every like home/bathroom you go into.
Oh, mate, I am not having any visitors this month, so nobody else is going to be noticing, so stay away, everyone.
What else have we got? Has Say's got an extra year's option in our favour on his contract? And do we expect him and Moutinho to sign contract extensions before the end of the season? I mean, Moutinho still seems like he's got legs in the tank. I think it might just be a case of he gets another year and we see how he goes. But
didn't Jose Sarr comment on Moutinho's Instagram and said, get this bloke, and well, probably not those words, but get this bloke a new contract, basically. So yeah, it must be, yeah. I reckon it's going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think they're actually exposed in the sense that teams in Europe can actually approach them now and do a pre-contract with them. So, you know, I think Sace could go to like one of the top clubs in France, I reckon, barring probably PSG, and be a really good player for them. So it might be attractive to him. But
I mean, there's only really one club he couldn't go to in Europe at the moment. That's Barcelona.
Wouldn't it be great if they signed him? They could do with a centre-half, to be fair. Yeah. So it'd be brilliant.
Yeah, I'd love it if Real Madrid signed him just to really bang it.
Just
up.
Play that video every home game, like before the games. Yeah.
Right. What else have we got? Steve Morgan, disappointed if Sanderson doesn't go straight into a team right away. Kilman switching over, you know, again, sort of highlighting, is it going to curb their development? And Gaz Roberts, as we kind of talked about earlier, saying who we think will replace Sace in the lineup, which I don't think we actually gave a definitive answer. So I'm right thinking our game after our next league games against Southampton. I made that up in my head. But who do we think is going to start Wolves' next league fixture? Do we think it's going to be Sanderson coming into the back line, or do we think it's more likely going to be Marcel playing there?
Thing is, he's kind of got options now, isn't he? Weirdly, like, out of nowhere, he's like, ooh, what do I do? Could play Marcel there, could play Sanderson there, could play Dendonka there.
But there's not a standout option, is there really? There's not a standout option. Like, is Marcel too small to play centre-back?
There's the safe option, which you'd say is probably Marcel, just because of his experience. And he played there for Lyon in the Champions League. So
yeah,
I'd say that's a fairly safe bet.
Yeah. As much as I would like to see Sanderson back there, I just don't think he's quite going to be called up immediately. I think it's kind of between, as you said, Martial and Dendonker. So we'll see.
You don't want to shift Dendonker.
That's another change then, isn't it? He's been playing well where he's been playing, rather than switching him over, bringing in another player, like, we're going to have to do that. So I'd rather just keep Kilman where he is and then stick Dendonker in, I suppose.
Yeah. I think it's probably going to be Marcel because Bruno seems to trust him. He's got experience playing there and it's less variables. It's shifting a player who's already in the first team squad into a position with Aitnori being able to play his natural position. It's just less changes. Weather injuries, fatigue all impact that, I think time will tell. But last up, from our good man Adam Price, with a incredibly sensible question, is when you are sat down and need to fart, which way do you lean in order to release the aforementioned gas? Apparently, if you lean to the left, you're not to be trusted. This isn't a political thing, he says. It's nice to end it on, you know, 80 minutes into recording for a question like this, isn't it?
I'd lean in the opposite direction to whoever is sat next to me. So if you're sat on my right, I would lean to my left and vice versa.
Yeah, I think that's the call. And then when you're on your own, it just depends on which leg you're already leaning.
You don't need to do anything really, do you?
No. Yeah.
And my response is girls don't fart, so...
I nearly shared it with you before I'm going.
I'm predictable.
Yeah.
So predictable. Yeah.
Marriage taught me a lot.
Yeah. Well, that seems like a perfect place to end the show. Thank you to everyone who's listened, as always. Shout outs to our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. Make sure you go check them out, pixelyetimedia.com. And make sure you check out the 90 Min Football Family Network as well. We'll be back to preview the FA Cup game, where we will be up for the cup. And I cannot wait, ladies and gentlemen, to be up for the cup yet again. Until next time, though, it's goodbye from Blake.
See ya.
It's goodbye from Gully.
Fuck United.
Goodbye from Kim. It's goodbye from Kim.
Bye.
And it's goodbye for me. Hope your year continues to be excellent.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves.